Welcome, everybody. I'm very happy, and I just, you know, in the little talk we had before the official ending, I already mentioned that I'm really happy and a little excited about this first time, the kickoff for this semester, in the second COVID semester of 2020. So this is courageously Nikita Gryadzin, who is doing the first time here, and who's actually stuck with us for quite some time. We've been talking about having him here, and somehow it was always a little difficult to find a date. So today is the day. I'm very happy to have you here and very much look forward to this talk. Nikita graduated from the Higher School of Economics in Moscow in 2013, and also did a bachelor and a master in international relations in that school. And from Moscow, he went to Oxford and is now reading in a, what I understand is a combined master and PhD program on international relations. He was, until recently, he was also a research assistant at the Center of Comprehensive European and International Studies at the University of Oxford. And he is now the deputy editor of an online journal called the Oxford Political Review, where he's in charge of the UK politics section, and also a very frequent contributor. I've checked this out. I am really in awe of the of his productivity there. So you can absolutely check this out. There is very well worth reading. His thesis, of which I understand we will hear part of now, focuses on UK foreign relations with specific focuses or case studies on the EU, on Russia, and on the United States. So a very broad spectrum here. He is also a researcher and co-worker at the at a think tank called the European Leadership Network. So I'm sure this, I have a feeling we are at the beginning of a very impressive career here, so we should keep this in mind. Also, let me introduce briefly the discussant. This is a new format which we are kicking off here this semester, in that following every discussion, every presentation, I'm sorry, we will have a student from Shanghai University act as discussant to point out whatever the student feels necessary or feels fruitful to point out. We will see that today, and hope that this will encourage further discussion, and that this will deepen our understanding, our thinking, and get us to discuss, get us to have even livelier events than we've had in the past. So this time also, as a first time, very thankful for this, is a person I know under Camille, but his official name is Zarkamul Monisov. I will keep this brief because most of you know him very well. He's been here means at Shanghai University for years. He was among the first generation of students, of international students studying international relations at Shanghai University. He was also the person on whom everything depended, because he was the only one who spoke fluent Chinese among the students. And he has stayed at Shanghai University now for a PhD in the program of global studies on in environmental policies in Uzbekistan. We'll come to you later, Camille, and I would now like to give the floor to you, Nikita.
Thank you very much, Iris. Many thanks to the organizers for inviting me. And I'm really glad to see you all and hope you enjoyed today's lecture. So please, before we start, please see the slide with a sort of references lists for today and for your consideration at your own time. Here you can find two of my articles and two very good books that inspired me a lot to dig deeper in this topic, both very well written by very experienced and famous scholars. So if eventually you'd like this lecture, you will obviously enjoy reading these books. And today we'll discuss Brexit, particularly UK's Brexit and post-Brexit negotiation strategy. What we had in the past, what's going on present, and what scenarios we can build for the future. Why put post in the title? Many experts say that Brexit has happened on 31st January this year, and we shouldn't call it like this anymore. Although I always ask, how then should we call everything that is happening now? Especially since the process of UK leaving the EU is simply far from being over. Most UK citizens didn't feel that Brexit has happened, because it did not. On paper, UK was crossed out in most UK EU political documents by now, and on 31st January, UK representatives left the European Parliament, for example. But to me, that was rather theatrical. While the real Brexit will happen soon and nobody knows exactly what to expect. I remember I was at a bank in Oxford and asked the banking assistant about what interest rate I should expect in a year if I open a bank account with them. The bank assistant answered, actually, no idea, and because there is one word starts with B. And I was thinking, what's that? What does it mean? And then, understood, this is Brexit. And in England, people really hate to even pronounce that already. In my research, I investigate the transformation of the approaches and positions of the United Kingdom in the negotiation process with the European Union to conclude a deal on the leaving the EU. In other words, I was tracing the evolution of the UK's Brexit negotiation strategy in two periods of negotiations in 2017, in 2018, with the EU. Just to remind you, negotiations with the EU started in June 2017 after UK Prime Minister Theresa May triggered the Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty on the European Union, which states that any member state may decide to withdraw from the Union. First phase of negotiations officially ended in November 2018 when both actors have come to sign key negotiation documents, the agreement and the political declaration. Also, I guess I shouldn't remind you how high the relevance of this whole story. It is primarily due to the fact that United Kingdom plays obviously a significant role in the European project, the future of which, yes, depends among other aspects on the outcome of negotiations with it. Besides, Brexit as a process is taking place right now, yeah, and given the significant role of globalization, complex interdependence of economics, it concerns both the Europe and the whole world in general. And the discussion of future relations that are currently happening and the prospects of further development of European integration is also at stake. In terms of methodology, my analysis was based on the comprehensive comparative analysis, primary resources, negotiating documents, British legislation on Brexit, interviews, and data from public opinion polling agencies, of course. In terms of theory, for those interested in international relations theory, I hope there are some here in this audience, I started my research with a kind of very interesting exercise. It is known that any theory, in general, is a tool with which we can explain some phenomena surrounding us. And each individual is guided by a certain theory. In the discussion of politics, economics, anything, each of us applies specific postulates of one or another paradigm, be it realistic, liberal, Marxist, right? And so on. And both leavers and remainers, who we call in this process, supporters and opponents of leaving the EU, they are no exception from this. And I determined that the leaders apply classical realism, talking about the strength and power of the state, the balance of power of Europe, protection of national interests. So that's all words that is applied in classical realism theory of IR. No less often they use Marxist and neo-Marxist paradigm in the context of, for example, negative impact of globalization. Given priority to the economy over politics, they, for example, explain the problems of British business allegedly related to only to UK membership in the EU. And they're against any integration in general. But for example, classic intergovernmental approach, that is kind of European integration theory, it is consistent with them in terms of the idea that only national interests of states move the integration project forward. As for Remainers, it is also very interesting, and there is completely different logic in their analysis. In their opinion, the states should only care about the welfare of citizens, reducing the cost of interaction with other countries. Thus, the institutionalized EU, ensuring peace in Europe, prosperity of Europeans, suited the Remainers, of course. And respectively, this is the logic of classical liberalism. They believe that the UK received huge dividends as a member of the European Integration Project. And it's from four freedoms to stable economic growth. And consequently, their position fits neo-functionalist approach, and maybe even federalist, with the spillover effect and the future Europe as a federation someday. So an interesting portrait of a typical Brexiteering Remainer you can see on the screen. Now we come to the most important part of the story. What happened with the UK strategy in the previous negotiations with the EU? I found out that the United Kingdom approached the first stage of negotiations in June 2017 from the hard positions prescribed by the government in the white paper voiced by the Prime Minister. The main points you can see on the screen: the abolition of the jurisdiction of the European Court, UK's own new system of migration control, etc. However, most of these points of the plan were not supported by clear specific implementation steps, which I would say seriously affected plan's effectiveness in negotiations. In response, the EU presented its own negotiation strategy, no less stringent. Brussels immediately made it clear that the four freedoms of the EU single market are indivisible. Any membership privileges that leave the EU, they cannot be preserved. So the Europeans actually took control of the negotiations. It was clearly also seen, specified all the negotiation aspects, and even then reduced the ability of the British to maneuver. And Theresa May suddenly recognizing allegedly favorable domestic political trends. She set up early elections in 2017, which led to a huge deterioration in the political situation, not in favor of the Brexiteers. And meanwhile, in the negotiation process, the lack of specific goals and objectives, EU accused the UK of not being ready to conduct a dialogue. As a result, the hard Brexit strategy that came first could not be implemented at all. And another aggravation of the political situation in the country, lack of progress at the first stage. The government, the UK government, thought about radical change now of the strategy. And in the late 2017 and beginning 2018, we experienced UK's transition from hard to soft Brexit strategy, described in the Chequers plan, next white paper. For now on, we talk about close relations with the EU, access to the single internal market of EU goods, signing comprehensive customs agreements, many very things that are making the relations closer and the leaving the Brexit less harmful, let's say. But this plan was also skeptical. Brexiteers considered it too soft, Remainers not soft enough. British analysts called the plan with new neologism BRINO. So it's Brexit in a name only, they said. Many points of the plan didn't suit Brussels initially, as they once again recalled that indivisibility of the EU internal market. So you can't just pick something out of this, like we want goods without tariffs and that's it. It doesn't work like this. So the progress in the negotiations was not observed in the second stage also. And eventually, both parties in a hurry adopted key negotiating documents, the agreement and the political declaration. Indeed, these documents, as a result of this second stage of negotiations, can be considered a victory for European diplomacy. all the negotiation, all the conditions set by Brussels to London are fulfilled 100%. Nevertheless, it is worth saying that the most of the provisions are more declarative, and most important issues of trade, status of Irish border, etc., postponed to the future, that is today. As it turned out, also, there are a lot of reasons for such sharp transformation. Domestic political crisis split at all levels of the UK government. In some cases, yes, incompetence, uncertainty, lack of specific goals, as I said previously, took place. And yeah, you see the slides, the negotiations in a nutshell this time. And in general, the results of my study then led me to the general conclusions that, first of all, Brexit without a doubt was caused by a whole complex of objective prerequisites, starting with different in nature socioeconomic models of Great Britain, Europe. Yeah, we admit that they are different in many ways. On the other hand, it was precisely over the years of Britain's long participation in the project, in the European project, that their strong financial and economic ties were built up. And the level of cooperation really increased. And obviously, UK often benefited from participating in European integration. But the majority of voters, unfortunately, maybe, who voted for Brexit, they didn't represent business and didn't see clearly the results of this integration, the benefits of integration, and they were looking at differences between the island and the continent, and fearing loss of national identity. They didn't accept, as they say, quote, the dominance and dictatorship of the European bureaucracy. And yeah, all of this played a big role for them. And we clearly observe that this is a struggle of two opposites, and the outcome of Brexit hugely depends on the answer of what outweighs these fights: pragmatism, commercial gain, or nationalist neo-imperial actually ambitions. And let me go straight to today, to present. Last year, I should start with last year first, Theresa May resignation as Prime Minister, as we have seen, contributed to the renewal and to a large extent the strengthening of the British position on Brexit. In October 2019, yes, the British government and the EU agreed on a revised withdrawal agreement with new arrangements, and it showed the big success of Tories in 2019 elections. Also showed how tired are UK citizens with this never-ending Brexit story. And eventually this withdrawal agreement we were talking about before was ratified by the UK and the EU and came into force on 31st January this year. So you can ask, what have we experienced here in the UK on the 1st of February when we woke up and as ordinary people, you know, nothing. And because many effects of Brexit still depend on how closely the UK will be tied to the EU, or whether the transition period ends without terms being agreed, well, no deal or hard Brexit. Thus, the story of soft Brexit versus hard Brexit is still present and still again here, and basically postponed to a later stage. And this is also the story of good comprehensive deal versus no deal exit. But it's not only about this, and it's about the same, even a bit worse, internal and external political socioeconomic environments that are here again in 2020, worsened by COVID-19 pandemic, actually. Not only Conservative Party that was quite strengthened in after general elections last year. Also, Labour Party has strengthened, in my opinion, with a new leader, Keir Starmer, and his team. They are fairly, I would say, fairly well working on counterbalancing Tories' Brexit line and agenda. However, what has changed since then, in my opinion, is the, let's say, courage and maybe overconfidence of current negotiators, UK negotiators. as we see, David Frost, there is a quote that he takes a maximalist position that sees any accommodation to EU jurisdiction as nullifying sacred principles of Brexit, he says. Seems like now the UK strategy, in my opinion, has a shape and framework. It's quite strict and quite straightforward. Finishing Brexit, at least having some sort of trade deal, or even no deal is fine, according to Boris Johnson. With the EU, while in fact trading under WTO rules, being fully independent global Britain, and Boris Johnson government in comparison to Theresa May, which was always somewhere in the middle, Theresa May government, I would say, between Remainers and Leavers, soft and hard. Johnson's approach is clearly a hard and bold, true Leaver one, I would say. The problem here is that it is too hard for the UK to avoid negative economic and political consequences. And while costs and losses reduction, in my opinion, should be main priority, especially now during COVID crisis. Therefore, today's negotiations are no less crucial for us than the previous, if not more, I would say, crucial. And I should admit that today's negotiations reflect the previous Brexit negotiations we were talking about when the UK was still part of the EU. You can say the context is different right now. You may argue and it is really a good point, but indeed COVID-19 pandemic frustrated plans for proper negotiations. They are now conducted online. That is absolutely much more difficult than going straight face-to-face meetings, then have a lunch together, drink coffee, fresh air. You know, this is a great opportunity for people to negotiate something, while here in front of the computer screens, I doubt that this is better in any way. But as we already know, UK would possibly, my suggestion is that the UK will possibly follow the same scenario today. And PM's line, take back control, is perhaps going to shift, in my opinion, to take back some control, let's say. But in many areas, they would still try to keep some things same. And there are some ideas, and we could trace that. UK is trying to cherry pick benefits from the EU single market again, and it's kind of softening this hard Brexit. But European Union say again the same, that it is not possible that you could just pick and choose something that you appreciate the most and forget about the other. So they expect very comprehensive agreement. And UK negotiations trying to push, yes, British agenda may be more stronger than previous negotiators. And Johnson was pushing to reach a deal all the time. Previously this year, he said, quote, "I see no reason why Brexit deal cannot be sealed by the end of July." He said it in June, I think, late May. Now on Monday, he set the date by 15th October or no deal. And I again would like to say that there is quite a probability that the same destiny awaits the current negotiations as well. As nobody can guarantee that a comprehensive trade deal with the EU will not leave something important in tiny print on the margins, you know, or to be discussed later. Yes, all parties want to reach a proper deal fast, but obviously without a harm to their national or in European community interests. But it's getting more and more difficult, I would say. And it looks like current negotiations are the same zero-sum game as before. One party wants the maximum and maximum possible benefit for itself at the expense of the negotiating partner, obviously. And what I also would add, that Corona crisis and this whole survival during the pandemic are on top of mind, yes, according to recent polls, but I believe the Brexit is not yet a solved puzzle, and even after the leaving on the 31st of January. And in according to some statistics, actually, it is much more economically disastrous than the pandemic, in fact, for the UK. And in some ways, EU is also will be harmed in the European business, obviously. So the deal is crucial here. And what I wanted also to add is that since today, since this week, let's say this Monday, a statement by Boris Johnson that I touched already before a bit, draws a bit dark picture of leaving the EU without a deal. And we go to the future actually now. And question mark here for the future. What exactly did he say? He said, quote, to walk away from the talks if a deal isn't done by 15th October and to introduce new legislation on customs rules in Northern Ireland in case the negotiations fail. And Lord Frost, current UK negotiator, on Tuesday this week also said that there was still time for the two sides to agree, but he said the EU needed to recognize the UK's negotiating position came from that of a sovereign state. So he claims that the European Union doesn't treat UK as a sovereign state, only as a member state or something like this, but UK is pushing for a more sovereign position as they already left. And as we know, the transition period is due to end on 31st December. EU is obviously, yes, the article on the right, is obviously losing trust in the UK in Brexit talks. And there is a big possibility now, in my opinion, that the EU wouldn't like to rush to find a deal, but as they claimed, they are ready for a hard Brexit. And that is a hard strategy from both sides, again, as it was in 2017. Let me see how much time we have. It's like 34 minutes.
You're doing fine.
Yes, I think still, yes, as we agreed on 30, 40 minutes, maybe I would stop here and leave the floor to comments, questions, and remarks. Again, let us hope for the best, and let me thank you all for your consideration. I look forward to our discussion. We'll be happy to hear your view on the issue, and I'm also extremely curious to know what do you think is the most likely Brexit scenario.